All right, welcome to the Type 093 Chinese Shang SSN sub-brief pre-ramble here. We're going to go over some sources and a little bit of history before we get started. One of my sources, I begin with the official sources from the American side, the Office of Naval Intelligence, report of PLAN capabilities and economic security review. Those are a few years old, but they're unclassified now, and they gave great insight as to what American intelligence gathering has found about the China, because China is really not forthcoming with their information, as you would expect, any nation really. And what they do come forward with, they lie about. And that has caused a lot of confusion in the open source INT community that I consider myself a part of now. And hopefully this lecture will clear things up. You know, hopefully I don't want to stir the pot. I want to try and make the pot more clear so people can see what this submarine is capable of. I have to give a big thank you to Mr. H.I. Sutton, who his article on Covert Shores, he published at my request some details about the 093 from what he knew. I was able to take his knowledge and build on it with my sources. And with all these other sources, we've come up with today's subbrief. Of course, Mr. Saturnax did participate and gave us some good information, some good photos. So thank you, Mr. Saturnax, coming through, supporting us as he always does. SinoDefenseForum.com has a great blog about this. The blog is not written in English, so you have to use Google Translate, but I spent a couple hours going through their forum just in awe of how open they discuss the Shang and its capabilities. They discuss all the other Chinese platforms as well, but it's a really good source to get what appear to be engineers and people inside the program talking about their program. U.S. Naval War College Review, Volume 59, an article by Eric A. McVaden was a good source. I read his article and was able to collaborate some facts that he had put out in Volume 59. Garawalk from subpirates.com, blog 163 and blog Sina, we all contributed photos to today's brief. And the website blueprints.com did the Shang drawing or image for us. That you'll see coming up. So thank you to everybody that participated. I really appreciate your support. Yeah. All right, we're going to begin our sub-brief with the August 1993 Vinhe incident. China's Ocean Shipping Corporation vessel, the Vinhe, is on a scheduled route from Tianjin port in China to Dubai and then further on into Kuwait and back again. It's been on the scheduled route for years. They just basically deliver building supplies from China to Dubai and Kuwait and, you know, return with whatever they have to go back to China. And it's just a regular routine visit. But in 1993, the United States alleges that the Vinhe is carrying chemical weapons that will be delivered to Bandar Abbas, Iran, from China. And in order to go through the Strait of Hormuz and into where, the Persian Gulf and deliver to Dubai and Kuwait, it is going to have to go by the Bandar Abbas fleet or a harbor. But that doesn't give them any, that's not proof that there's chemical weapons on board. But the United States swears that there's chemical weapons on board. They have intelligence, it's infallible, they know that it's there. And so they begin shadowing the Vinhe in the Indian Ocean as it makes its way into the Gulf of Oman, getting ready to enter the Persian Gulf. And it calls for, diplomatic action to be taken, and over the radio they call for the ship to return to port so no further action is required by anybody. They don't want to stir or start an international incident over this weapons of mass destruction, but they certainly don't want them delivered either. So the United States finally forces the Gulf states of United Arab Emirates, Oman, Saudi Arabia, and Kuwait, and Dubai, and Qatar to close all of its ports to the Vinhe so it doesn't have anywhere to pull in, including Dubai and Kuwait, where it's supposed to go. So it's sitting in the Gulf of Oman, basically under siege. The only open ports in the vicinity are the Iranian ports, ironically, the ones that the United States were trying to keep the ship from going to in the first place, is the only port it can go to now. But it doesn't even do that. It sits in the Gulf of Oman for a few weeks as this siege and diplomatic pressure evolves. The United States administration is advised by its lawyers that it is illegal to search a ship at sea without consent. They compromise by escorting the Vinhe to a Saudi Arabian port, and with a joint Chinese, Saudi Arabian, and American inspection team, they'll all go on board together and see what's going on with the manifest. What are they actually shipping? Well, they do this, and wouldn't you know it, the inspection team finds no weapons. They only find the paint and all the items that are on the manifest. There's no contraband whatsoever. This has all been bad information from the American intelligence community again, and just another example of how unreliable that can be. Well, China finds out about this. Of course, it gets into the media. The Chinese nationalism spikes over this. The Chinese people want a response. They want compensation. The company that runs the shipping has delayed delivery. They have delayed payment. They have penalties for delayed delivery. This has a ripple effect through the Chinese economy at a local level with the company that runs this. The Chinese Ocean Shipping Corporation has incurred, you know, financial hardship because of this mistake that the United States has made. Well, the United States doesn't offer any compensation, doesn't even offer any kind of apology or acknowledgement of wrongdoing. The United States doubles down during an investigation by the United Nations years later, where there were public hearings. The United States representative is saying, we had good information, the weapons of mass destruction were going to be loaded on it, but because we found out about it, they did not load the weapons of mass destruction, which is complete baloney. They just would not apologize because they didn't want to, you know, agree that they had made a mistake. And they certainly didn't want to pay any kind of financial compensation to China. The Vinhe incident is seen historically as one of the key moments where China and American relationships begin to fracture again after the 1970s Nixon visit. You know, through the 70s and 80s, and early 90s, things were getting better between America and China. We had strong economic bonds, and that was bleeding over into a little bit of cultural exchange, you know, and we were having a positive relationship with these countries. And this incident is the beginning of the end of that. The Vinhe incident, 1993. All right. In 1994, the very next year, Project 093 is announced by Chinese President Jiang Zemin, instructs the Central Military Commission to start a next-generation submarine program. China wants to build a navy capable of protecting its shipping lanes in distant seas. And this is the natural progression of a developing country where they get to a point where they have long-range shipping and trade deals that need protection by the Navy. The United States went through this in the early 1900s, and then again after World War II, protecting the shipping lanes was the primary focus of the United States Navy. Well, China is now saying that they need to do the same thing based on what happened to the Vinhe. They didn't have any other military response. They only had diplomatic avenues to go after and protect their investment. So this is in direct response to the Vinhe incident. The PLAN will use nuclear submarines as its primary long-range naval power. And here we can see not only a picture of the president, and there's also a graph of how far out 1,000 nautical miles is from the Chinese coast. And this is where they're going to put their submarines. Their nuclear-powered submarines are going to fill this red void out to the limits of 1,000 nautical miles, as well as protect the sea lanes. That's still there, too. But they want to flood this region in a layered defense of anti-ship ballistic missiles that can reach out to 1,000 nautical miles, which, by the way, are devastating. Those things are incredible technology. They call them carrier killers, which is a bit of an overstatement, but they are effective, and they're very deadly, and they will damage a ship and possibly sink a carrier if it hits it. But I digress. Inside 540 nautical miles, that is where the submarines will be supported by aircraft, land-based long-range aircraft over them, keeping the hostile ASW aircraft off of the submarines. And then inside 270 nautical miles, which includes Taiwan, they are going to have everybody else, diesel boats, nuclear subs, coastal defense vessels, and their surface fleet supported by the Air Force inside 270 nautical miles. On a side note, China still considers Taiwan a province of mainland China. That has not been resolved yet. MND, 7th Research Institute of National Defense of the People's Republic of China. That's a mouthful. What this is inside Wuhan, China, in the Hubei province, is a large campus. It is enormous, that has multiple research and development institutes on this, you know, city-sized campus. Research Institute 719 is specifically researching and developing submarines. Now, there are other research labs like 711, 712, going all the way up to 726, I believe is the last one. And each one has their own primary focus, whether it's, you know, artificial intelligence, computing and technology, and, you know, robotics would be another one. Materials, experimental materials would be one. Well, 719 is for submarines only. So that's our primary focus for these subbriefs. It's the Primary Nuclear Submarine Design Bureau, as I said. It was established in the early 1960s. This entire complex took multiple years to build. So from 1960 to 1963 or so, they got all these up and running. Research Development Institute 719 by itself employs about 700 engineers and researchers. Those are the people going to work every day designing better systems, quieting their submarines, building a better nuclear reactor and propulsion system inside the next generation boat. All right, here is a quick map of China and their fleet headquarters. They have three major headquarters for their Navy, PLAN. Up in the north, they have the Qingdao North Sea Fleet, the Ningbo East Sea Fleet, and the Zhenjiang South Sea Fleet. Here are their fleet distributions. Up in the north and down in the south are where the nuclear boats are stationed out of. Ningbo doesn't have any nuclear submarines. There are diesel boats in all three. And notice how the South Sea Fleet has a lot of ships, a lot of frigates, amphibious ships, patrol craft, corvettes. That's because China, moving forward, is putting a lot of pressure militarily into the South China Sea as they're trying to make a claim by proxy of the Spratly and Paracel Islands, which are contested by other countries. The idea is if they simply occupy it, it becomes theirs, you know, ownership by proxy. All right, let's begin. Type 093 Shang SSN subbrief. Designing the Type 093 subbrief. So China began by using Russian technology to improve their information and communication equipment in the command section of the Shang. They ripped out everything from the Han. They didn't reuse any of that equipment, and they built a brand new fire control system, radio communication suite, inboard ships control systems and systems monitoring. All that was completely redesigned with Russian help. In the beginning, we expected the 093 to resemble a Victor III or a Victor class because of a lot of the Russian technology being used from that time. That was not the case, but they still used Russian help. The fire control system that they ended up with can shoot the submarine variant of the YJ-18 anti-ship cruise missile. And I would postulate that this is the primary weapon of the Type 039 submarine. And we'll get into more as to why that is at the end of the lecture. The reactor design was assisted by France in the beginning of 1995. If you remember, their previous design with the Han and the Zha ballistic missile submarine, which was the same reactor design, was very inefficient. So they came in with a new design with some help from France, and Canada began providing technical assistance in 1998. And the American company Westinghouse made its AP600 civilian power plant available to China to study. The idea behind the Westinghouse deal was they would use the AP600 method or style for their civilian plants. That was not supposed to be a military project, but they learned things from that design that they then used in the Type 093. China's nuclear power design improved significantly from 1995 to 2000 with this help. The new submarine will also have a double hull design, just like the Han had, and like most Russian submarines have, but they'll be using HY116 steel, that's high-yield 116 steel, for the pressure hull. This makes it a relatively deep-diving tactical submarine, comparable to, but not the same as, the American Seawolf class. But it can dive deeper than, say, the 688, because they use a different HY steel. And it has six 53-centimeter bow torpedoes in a 4-over-2 configuration, just like the Han. That's one of the few things that they kept from the Han design into the Type 093 design, was the torpedo tube configuration. All right, the Bohai Shipyard Heavy Industry Company is the only shipyard in China that builds nuclear submarines. So we're back here again to talk about the Shang 093 type. It's located in the Lonang province. That's in northern China, right next to North Korea. They produce both military and civilian vessels. They have a huge assembly building they recently completed. And inside that assembly building, they can build up to 4 nuclear submarines at the same time. It is a climate-controlled building, which means no matter how bad the weather gets outside, no matter what time of year it is, they can continue working on 4 submarines at once. All right, this Type 093 Shang by the numbers. First is the length. Let me address this. The length as measured by the satellite measuring tool from Google Images, satellite images, is 103 meters. And there's a little bit of uncertainty in that. So it could be 104 meters. But the key here is for all 3 variants of the 093 Shang, they are all the same length. That is an extremely controversial thing to say for people that don't believe that, as we'll get to a little bit later on. But as measured from satellite images, the length is the same. You might argue that it's 104 meters, and I would be okay with that, but it's not 110. It's not that much different between the 3 variants. And that is very important. Remember that, 103 meters for the Shang Alpha, and the Shang Bravo, 103. The beam is 11 meters. It displaces about 7,000 tons, which is a little bit more than a 688. It is 30 knots maximum, a little bit slower than a 688, probably because it's pushing a little bit more weight. And it has 1 pressurized water reactor turning 1 shaft with a 7-bladed skewed screw on the end. It eventually gets down to approximately 120 decibels noise level when it's running in quiet. The early versions of the Shang didn't make it that quiet, but the later versions certainly did. And they did that with rafting and sound isolation techniques that we'll talk about. Test depth is about 400 meters because they're using that HY116 steel. They have an endurance estimated at 80 days between port visits and food reload. The crew's 100, and they have the 6 torpedo tubes. They can stow up to 20 weapons, including those missiles, or up to 36 naval mines, and they can also do a combination of either some of one and some of the other. They basically copied France's low-freak flank sonar that they used on the later versions of the Han. They're installing the same version here on the Shang with the Chinese name of HSQG-207. And on the Type 093 Bravo, the very last variant, there is an unknown type of towed sonar array on that. So they do have towed sonar array capability on the Bravo variant of the Shang. All right, Type 093 Shang hulls 407 and 408. These are the first 2 hulls that they built, beginning in 1999, commissioning them in 2006 and 2007. They had 4 years of sea trials apiece, and they learned a lot from their design in this period. So they went back to the drawing board to make some changes. But before we go there, let's talk about how you're going to identify the first 2 hulls of the Shang. If you see a photo of it on the surface, or if you are in the position to see it on the surface in real life, is the windows at the top of the sail is a very Soviet era design for Russian submarines. And they continued that over into this design. This is a foul weather bridge, which means they can be surfaced and navigate a crew in the sail in terrible weather, whether it's, you know, snow, sleet, whatever, you know, too cold. They can get in there and be protected from the elements and still be able to see out the windows. So the first 2 hulls have those windows. The sail on the front, as it meets the topside deck, is a straight 90 degree joint. It is like the letter L, 90 degrees. There's no curve to it at the top or at the bottom of the sail. And then finally, if you look at the rudder, you'll notice that there is no tube on top. Later on, there will be a tube. So if it doesn't have a tube, it has a 90 degree joint. And most obviously, if it has windows, it is hulls 1 and 2 of the Shang. All right, back to the drawing board. They're going to go back and try to make some improvements. Even though the Han was very noisy and the Shang hulls 1 and 2 were much better, they still weren't quiet enough to be tactical in a modern day naval environment. They did not match with their, you know, their Russian counterparts, and certainly not as good as the American counterparts. So they went back to the drawing board and they added sound rafting improvements to the engine room. And all major machinery in the boat, forward and aft, sits on sound-absorbing floating decks, like the American submarines do, and shock-absorbing springs. Now, these shock-absorbing springs aren't the coil springs you may be picturing like in a mattress or something. A shock-absorbing spring can come in many different shapes, the most common of which looks like the letter D. It's simply a flat surface that mounts, and then there's a loop, a steel, you know, loop that makes kind of a half circle, and that half circle can support weight and absorb frequency. When you put a rubber mount on top of that, you know, spring, you get the effect of both absorbing sound. And if you put a rubber raft on top of that, that you then mount a piece of equipment inside of, so it looks like it's sitting in a raft, you get triple layer of sound absorption. And this is called sound rafting. It's an improvement that greatly isolates sound from individual pieces of equipment inside the submarine. Well, they did this. They went back to the drawing board and rafted as much as they could, and it worked. It got them down to that 120 decibels we had talked about. They also installed anechoic tiles on the exterior, which has a dual effect of kind of insulating the sound inside from going out into the water a small amount, but it is designed to deflect and absorb and refract active sonar that's coming at it from the outside. So it's a little less susceptible to active sonar, as well as making it a little bit more quiet. They also flared the sail forward at the deck level and curved of the forward top part of the sail backwards to give it a little bit better hydrodynamic flow. They also removed the sail windows because those things are just basically bolted in there and they can rattle underway at high speeds. All right, the Type 093 Hull 413, they only made one of these. This is one of one. After they gone all the changes from the first two hulls, they laid down the keel in 2009, launched it 3 years later, only needed 3 years of sea trials, so the sea trials were getting shorter. They were happy with the improvements that they made. They commissioned it in 2015, and then they went back to the drawing board again. But here's how you see, or here's how you determine if Type 093 Alpha is the one you're looking at. You look at the sail and look for those flares at the bottom and the rounded top of the sail. If you see that little ski jump looking thing at the bottom and there's no hump and there's no towed array back there on the rudder, then you know you're looking at the one of one hull 413 Shang. This is also known as the Shang Alpha or the Type 093 Alpha. It was the only one of the alphas that they made. All right, so they went back to the drawing board and they added a little more tactical capability. They added a towed array to the Alpha and called it Bravo. They did a few more things than that. We'll go over. They laid the keel in 2012, launched her in 2014 with only 2 years of sea trials. They were happy with their results. They finally got the Shang Bravo to where it needs to be. It's quiet. It's got low frequency detection capability, long range capability. They have a towed array capability now. They're very happy with that. They build three of these, making one a year in 2016, 2017, 2018. The way you're going to visually identify this is, again, look for the rounded sail in the front, just like the Alpha, but then look for a hump in the back, which is sometimes hard to see depending on the angle of the photograph you're looking at. But you can always just look at the rudder, and clearly from any angle, you'll see that there is a tube that protrudes out past the rudder at the very aft end, and that is a towed array stowage tube. That is only on the Type 093 Bravo. No matter what else you see, if you see that towed array stowage tube and it's a Shang, it's a Bravo. All right, so let's talk about this hump. This is the one that's going to curl some toes out there because it goes against what a lot of early websites suggested or guessed at, and basically they got it wrong is what I'm saying. This began with the Chinese media sites talking about the Shang has now VLS capability to shoot these YJ-18 cruise missiles that I talked about in the very beginning. But that is misinformation coming out of the Chinese media. Unfortunately, it was picked up by every internet site that follows this stuff as if it was gospel, and they echoed it. And so now everybody seems to think that the Shang 093 Bravo has VLS tubes. It does not. And I have the picture here zoomed in just after the sail where they claim the VLS tubes to be, where you can definitely see that there is clearly a hump that starts way forward, kind of in the middle of the sail there, below the Fairwater Plains. It slowly ramps up for hydrodynamic purposes only to reduce the vortices coming off the sails. It goes through the water to about 2 to 2.5 feet high, where it then flattens out for just a few feet, and then it slopes back down again. If you look at part of the picture where I've zoomed in on the hump, you'll see that there is no VLS hatch, but you can clearly see three holes that allow any water, or air rather, that's inside the hump to escape as the submarine dives. If you didn't have those holes, there would be an air bubble in this hump after the submarine dove, and surprisingly, that can be very loud. It sounds like water washing around in a bathtub as you're trying to sneak around the ocean. It's very detectable. So they added those holes that the water could escape after the submarine dove. But more importantly, there is no VLS hatch back there. It's certainly not in the configuration that the Chinese media claimed it was in, which is in a side-by-side configuration. In other words, as you're looking at the submarine from the bow, it would be going from right to left. They claim to have three tubes in line. There is not enough room for three tubes in line in this design. And because all the submarines are the same length, roughly within a meter of each other, I'll give the critics that, within a meter of each other, that is not enough room to put a VLS tube, not even one. You would need multiple meters. You would need something that's closer to 110 meters in length. And it simply isn't the case. The photographic evidence shows that all three of these variants are somewhere between 103 meters and 104 meters. They don't have the additional length required to add a VLS tube at all on the Shang Bravo. What is there is probably what the Germans did with the Type 212. They probably added a towed array handling system, and there is probably a towed array stowage tube that goes from the hump back to the rudder. And I measured that at 262 feet, which is enough length to stow a TB16 Fatline towed array, or the Chinese knockoff of what we call the Fatline towed array. It's a single stave array that's good for low frequencies, and there would be enough room for it to be stowed there, and a few extra feet for a handling system. It fits perfectly within the measurements of the Shang Bravo. So the hump shape not only has a hydrodynamic purpose to help alleviate some of the vortices coming off the sail as it goes through the water submerged, it is also big enough to hold a towed array handling system and its stowage tube. So why is the YJ-18 so important? Like, what makes this submarine a game changer? Well, one is the attack range. The YJ-18 can, by American estimates, go up to 290 nautical miles. That is huge. And the way that it does this is it only goes at 0.8 Mach cruise speed as it sea skims towards the target. So there is a real delay, if it's going the full length of its range, between the time it's launched and the time that it is detected, or it's at its target at least. And so if the initial launch is not detected by the target, it may never know that it's being attacked until it's too late. This also buys the launching platform plenty of time to launch more than one salvo before the first salvo is detected 290 miles downrange, and gives the Shang the opportunity to begin leaving the launch basket, opening datum on the launch area before the target even realizes it's being attacked. So when used tactically, this YJ-18's capability will give the Shang ability to escape and evade before the attack begins. Now, the way the YJ-18 works is, once it gets onto its terminal phase and it has its target, which is expected to happen between the 16 and 20 mile point, it accelerates from the relatively slow 0.8 Mach to Mach 3, which is 2,283 miles per hour at sea level. And at that point, it takes only 25 seconds to get from where it accelerated to the target. That 25 seconds is all the time a radar operator has to recognize the threat, report the threat, spin up a missile, and get a defensive missile in the air to shoot down this weapon. And if these things are coming in packs of 4 to 6, they're not going to have enough weapons in the air by the time it hits. Also, because the final phase is a sprint at Mach 3, that makes it less likely that it'll be intercepted by a ballistic defense like SeaWiz, that uses a ballistic round. That's not saying it couldn't shoot it down, but it's less likely to shoot it down because it's so fast. Also, because of the speed change of 0.8 to Mach 3 makes it hard for a ballistic computer to calculate if it does see it out that far, because the speed is not constant. So it does have a 300 kilogram conventional warhead, which is approximately 660 pounds. Pretty good conventional warhead. It is nuclear capable. It can have a tactical nuke on board as well, which would be terrifying. And don't forget that the submarines do shoot the YU-8 53 centimeter torpedo as well. That torpedo doesn't have, of course, the range the missile has, but it is an anti-ship, anti-submarine torpedo that is very capable. All right, so here are your six Shangs of the Type 093. You have two Type 093 originals. You have one Type 093 Alpha with the ski slope front on the sail, like the Seawolf has. And then you have three of the Type 093 Bravos, which has the ski slope sail, the rounded sail on the front top, and the hump with the towed array tube on the rudder, which is the easiest way to identify that. Just look at the rudder right there. All right, so final thoughts on China's Shang is it's the quietest submarine that they've built to date as of building this one. The capabilities are on par roughly with First Flight 688. And to give you an idea of what technology that is, we built that in the 1970s with 1960s technology. Of course, Flights 2 and 3 got a lot better, but First Flight 688 seems to match these capabilities on paper. It has a very long anti-ship cruise missile capability. I believe that's the primary weapon of the Shang. We've used multiple sources to improve the Shang. Russia, France, Canada helped them out with the nuclear power program. And of course, Westinghouse gave them plans to the AP600 nuclear reactor that they then used knowledge from that to improve their submarines, even though it's not quite the same apples to apples comparison. Because they got better civilian nuclear reactors, they were able to build a better military one. And by replacing, or they will replace, the five Han submarines with these six Shangs in the 2020s. So this decade, as of this recording, we can expect the Hans to be retired. They've already retired two of them. The last three should be retired as these Shangs come on service. And overall, I think it's a good and capable submarine. I think the Chinese have done quite well for themselves. I'm surprised that they only built six, but that's probably because they have something better on the drawing board, and we'll do a sub-brief on that when that comes out. All right, so I want to say thank you, everybody, for listening to my sub-brief on the Type 093 Shang, and recognize our division officers here, Sean O'Neill, Scott Borg, Brendan Frey, the Collier Report, fellow Patreon. Check out his channel. Aegir Jormungandr, and new division officer, Daniel Onley. Daniel, thank you for supporting me here. I do appreciate it. Always welcoming new division officers. And if you are a division officer and you don't see your name here, I've recorded this a little bit early and I'll definitely get you in the next one. We're starting to catch up after our move and getting a little bit ahead on the schedule just by a couple weeks. So don't fret if you don't see your name. You'll definitely be on the next one. All right. That concludes the sub brief. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time.